I'm Jillian Turner in Washington, in for Shannon Bream. Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro now in U.S. custody after a months-long pressure campaign on the Latin American nation.
Maduro and his wife will soon face the full might of American justice.
The dictator captured by U.S. special forces along with his wife in a daring operation, set to face drug trafficking and narco-terrorism charges following months of escalating tension.
All right, that was a Jillian Turner on Fox, and I just wanted to, I thought that captures the drama of what just happened over the weekend. Tremendous drama. I hope you saw it. I hope you had a chance to capture and to take in exactly what it is that our military just did. But because a lot of the reports on news, in fact, Jillian Turner herself is so anti-Trump, as you listen to the whole show, it's every interaction is a way she's attempting to put something negative on what just happened. Well, you know, there may be some negatives. Well, maybe there are. I don't know. No one was killed. That's amazing. And very little damage to American interests. I mean, it really was a stunning operation. And by the time you finish listening to today's broadcast, I think you will understand how deep and wide and important an operation it was. And so we'll talk about that. But first, one of the things that she talked about is, he's coming into the country. He's here. It's actually he's going to appear in court. Maduro, he and his wife will appear in court in New York City today. Might be happening right now. I don't know. But a former Attorney General Bill Barr was one of the guests on Fox News Sunday. And he was asked, he was the one actually that wrote and issued the indictment of Maduro that they are basing this arrest on. And so I thought it would be really interesting to hear what he had to say about this. And so let's listen.
Yeah, I have a high degree of confidence he'll ultimately be convicted, and all the legal arguments that have been raised really were raised during the prosecution of Noriega, which was a very parallel situation.
Which you also oversaw.
Right. And I think they will be rejected, and I think he will be convicted, and I think he's looking at sentences similar to, if not bigger, than Noriega's sentence. He's committed far more crimes, in my mind, than Noriega did. And Noriega got a 40-year sentence, which was reduced to 30, but then he also served time in France and then later in Panama, where he died.
Well, we have a lot to say. Well, I was glad to hear that from Bill Barr. Maduro's being tried in New York City, which makes me very uncomfortable. I'll get into that actually at the end of the show today. We have a special guest that's going to be talking to us first, Dr. Paul Coyer. His wife is Venezuelan, and Paul is an international expert all over the globe. And so we have a great discussion on this, and I think you will benefit. I think you're going to learn things that you did not know. But before we get to that, this is Sanctity of Life Month. Did you know that? January. This is the month where the big march in Washington takes place. I used to always be there, the March for Life. And this year we are honoring over 67 million babies whose lives have been tragically ended through abortion since Roe. Sadly, since Roe versus Wade was overturned, babies' lives are at an even greater risk. Because the abortion pill accounts for over 60% of all abortions, making this tragedy available 24/7 and in your own home. But in the midst of this darkness, there is a light that shines. Preborn has rescued over 400,000 babies from abortion, and every day, on average, they rescue 200-plus babies. When a woman considering abortion hears her baby's heartbeat and sees her precious baby on ultrasound, her baby's chance at life is doubled. For just $28, which is the cost now of a dinner, I would say, you can sponsor an ultrasound to introduce a mom to her baby for the first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. All right. Well, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7, in case you didn't know that part. We are happy to come to you each week with just information. We try to make it timely. Sometimes it isn't so timely. Sometimes it's a very thought-provoking interview with someone who has tremendous knowledge in a certain area. But today we're going to do Day of News, because the whole issue in Venezuela has repercussions in so many areas, and you're going to see the headlines unfold in the next few days. And I really want because I believe truth is so important, I want you to understand more deeply what's actually unfolding. And we'll do that on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Former Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro and his wife have arrived in New York to face charges. Here he is coming off the plane, standing next to the head of the DEA. President Trump says the U.S. is going to run Venezuela, even if it requires American troops to do it.
We're not afraid of boots on the ground if we have to have. We had boots on the ground last night.
Under the cover of darkness late Friday night, the U.S. military launched more than 150 aircraft from dozens of bases on land and sea, with their transponders turned off to avoid detection. The mission? Capture Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro and his wife.
Failure of one component of this well-oiled machine would have endangered the entire mission.
The strike force launched from the USS Iwo Jima, composed of Delta Force operatives flown just 100 feet above the sea by pilots from the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, known as the Night Stalkers. Regime bases and air defense systems were destroyed to protect the Americans coming ashore.
On arrival into the target area, the helicopters came under fire, and they replied with that fire with overwhelming force in self-defense.
The strike force assaulted Maduro's compound in Caracas at 2 a.m. local, where they snatched their prize and returned to their warship waiting offshore. CIA Director John Ratcliffe called it teamwork at its finest. American spies had been studying Maduro's pattern of life for weeks, waiting for the right moment to strike.
Back to the operation, General Kane said one helicopter was damaged, two soldiers were wounded, but everyone came home alive.
All right, that was Lucas Tomlinson of Fox News. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, what happened over the weekend in Venezuela is probably much larger than most of us can even comprehend. I've been reading a lot this morning, and I've followed Venezuela for a decade, two decades, carefully, and covered it as often as I possibly can, and I'm learning more and more. So it's my goal this morning to help you understand how really big and how really important this was. And to join in that discussion and lead it, actually, is my good friend, Dr. Paul Coyer. It's always a challenge to introduce him because his resume is huge, but Paul is a research professor at the Institute of World Politics, and he has, honestly, expertise in areas all over the world, China and Hong Kong and Shanghai. He lived there for a while. In Italy, and he's married to a Venezuelan woman, so that's why, one of the reasons why he knows so much about what's happening in South America. So I've asked Paul to join me this morning because I know he has insights that I lack. And so, Paul, thank you for joining me and giving us your time this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I think the first question I want to ask you, Paul, is just pretty simple. What do you think about what just happened? From your perspective, what just took place over the weekend and what's significant about it?
Yeah, great question, because it gives me a lot of room to explain a bit about a few things. Number one, I'm thrilled that Nicolas Maduro is now no longer in power. There are a lot of actors down there that we can discuss later on in the conversation that remain problematic potentially, but Nicolas Maduro obviously was the president, quote-unquote president. He lost provably the election that took place most recently on July 30th of 2024 to his opponent, an elderly gentleman named Edmundo. But the world keeps calling him president, which I think is something that, you know, we should talk about as well. We want to talk about who he actually was. He was a usurper, not the president. But him being gone is a good thing. Venezuelans in Venezuela and around the world are celebrating. They are all thrilled. This gentleman, if you can call him that, had presided over massive human rights abuses, thousands and thousands and thousands of people imprisoned and tortured for their political beliefs. He had presided over an imploding economy that had resulted in malnutrition and lack of basic medical care being one of the leading causes of death for children for about the last decade in Venezuela, which is one of the things that people just don't realize here in the United States, the depth of humanitarian catastrophe that he and his government presided over. He has presided over, because of that, the departure of about 8 million Venezuelans from Venezuela over the last decade plus, over the last 10 to 12 years, which has resulted in Venezuelans being one of the leading sources of immigrants to the United States and has resulted in dramatic rise in instability throughout Latin America as masses of Venezuelans have fled to neighboring countries. That's just a brief version of why people are celebrating now. So what comes next is another story, but right now they are thrilled to see him not just gone, but in custody in the United States and facing charges for crimes that we all know he committed, narco-trafficking, among many, many others.
Paul, let me add my rudimentary understanding through the years of Venezuela. Especially, I remember when I was in high school, I dated a boy who had just moved back from Venezuela because his dad worked for an American oil company because America was so involved. And they were, at that time, about the third richest country in the Western Hemisphere. When Hugo Chavez took power, he was elected through the democratic system, which is what communists are doing nowadays. He disbanded the Supreme Court, as I recall, disbanded the parliament, the people's, whatever their assembly is called, and began to take over industry. And then when Maduro, the bus driver who was selected by Chavez, took over, it even got worse. And I remember, you and I've talked about this through the years, the starvation, the lack of medicine, the lack of medical care, murder in the street, lawlessness. That's really what Hugo Chavez accelerated. Am I getting that right?
You are. Yes, Caracas had one of the highest unsolved murder rates in the world, if not the highest. I think the stat I saw most recently was something like 90+% of murders went unsolved in Caracas. And it's one of the most violent cities in the world. I mean, it ranks up there literally with Mogadishu and others like that.
So the one thing that I'm concerned about, Paul, is, of course, this is no doubt good for Venezuelans. And we will talk about, we're going to get into the mystery of what happens next and the uncertainty of what's happening here at home and around the various horrible actors that are involved in Venezuela. But I want to probably illustrate it this way. I think the lack of understanding. And I'm jumping to this without you knowing this, but Marjorie Taylor Greene made a statement on Meet the Press, I believe, yesterday. And I thought it was a really good example of how Americans just don't quite understand the importance of this beyond its benefit to the Venezuelan people. This is clip 9. Let's listen. I'd love to hear your response to this. This is clip 9.
If this was really about narco-terrorists and about protecting Americans from cartels and drugs being brought into America, the Trump administration would be attacking the Mexican cartels. Now, I am not defending Maduro, and of course I'm happy for the people of Venezuela to be liberated, but Americans celebrated the liberation of the Iraqi people after Saddam Hussein. They celebrated the liberation of the Libyan people after Gaddafi, and this is the same Washington playbook that we are so sick and tired of, that doesn't serve the American people, but actually serves the big corporations, the banks, and the oil executives. And so my pushback here is on the Trump administration that campaigned on Make America Great Again, that we thought was putting America first. I want to see domestic policy be the priority that helps Americans afford life after four disastrous years of the Biden administration. I want to see domestic policies that prioritizes jobs and affordable housing for Americans after four disastrous years of the Biden administration. And I want to see domestic priorities that put Americans first in regards of health care. Health insurance costs too much, car insurance, home insurance. And these are issues that matter to Americans. We don't consider Venezuela our neighborhood. Our neighborhood is right here in the 50 United States, not in the Southern Hemisphere.
All right. That's a bucket load of things to talk about, Paul. But I guess, I would just a couple of things. Let me ask you this way. She refers to our involvement in Iraq when they did have their first election and they all had blue thumbs, which was amazing.
Right.
And then Libya, Gaddafi, and she's comparing it to that. What are the differences between us liberating the Venezuelan people and liberating the Iraqis and the Libyans?
Yeah, well, first of all, we didn't, quote unquote, liberate the Libyans, as you know. We left them in complete chaos.
Yes, we did.
And it was really led by French President Sarkozy at the time, and we were kind of drug into it. And so, no, we didn't liberate Libya. We took away Gaddafi, who had really turned state's evidence on his weapons of mass destruction program, and because he didn't want to have happen to him what happened to Saddam Hussein. And we then turned on him and left Libya in the hands of more Islamic jihadists, which we saw in 2012, right, the attack on the American embassy personnel and the killing of the American ambassador. So Libya is a mess right now. It's been ongoing civil war since then. Very different situation. Same thing with Iraq. Same thing with Afghanistan. Very different situations. Venezuela is not the Middle East. Marco Rubio addressed this issue in an interview over the weekend when he said that the most the thing that makes Venezuela most like the Middle East is purely the fact that they have Hezbollah training camps and Iranians, and not just Iranians, but Islamic Arabs also running around Venezuela, threatening American interests down there. So one of the things I wanted to address that was such an egregious misunderstanding on her part, she ended with the fact that she, with her assertion rather, that Venezuela is not America's neighborhood. That shows enormous ignorance. Of what is in America's national interests, what is in the benefit of the American people, and what our neighborhood is. It most certainly is our neighborhood. It's for one thing, it's a 30-minute missile ride or flight from the United States. That's how close Venezuela is. And that's a concern because in Venezuela, we have, as you well know, all of America's worst enemies from around the world, Russia, China, Iran, and Hezbollah, and many others, are down in Venezuela threatening America's interests and using Venezuela as a base to do so. And this regime has opened its doors purposefully to those people. So that is that's a major concern. Then you got the fact that Venezuela is probably the biggest natural resource source of natural resources, possibly, arguably, in the world today, not just because it's more than 300 billion reserves of oil, barrels of oil there, but because of its massive gold deposits, its diamonds, its titanium, its rare earth, its potential for hydropower, its many, many other sorts of resources, bauxite and iron ore. And I could go down a list that's forever long. That is hugely important for economic, for the United States' growing economy, for our high-tech economy, for energy, and for Venezuela's reconstruction, which is going to need to take place. Venezuela's economy has dropped significantly from what it was when Hugo Chavez took over. And Venezuelan oil, I want to jump to this just for a second, is a very, very heavy sort of crude that's very tar-like. The United States is one of the only countries in the world that has the refineries that are capable of dealing with that oil and refining it, you know, making it usable by the rest of the world. So there's a lot of symbiosis there that is, you know, that can come back into play here if we get some of these big American oil companies that Marjorie Taylor Greene was just decrying down there working again. Now, Chevron has always been present. They've been there since, I think, 1925 for 101 years, I believe the number is. They have been given, because of the long experience, the Trump administration and Biden before it gave regular exemptions to them from sanctions so they could continue to operate down there. I think that was a good thing. So if Americans are going to, and American corporations are going to make money on this, frankly, I don't care. And I guarantee you the Venezuelan people rather don't care, as long as they also benefit from it. Because I
and
guarantee
they did.
You that right now, the Venezuelan people are not benefiting from any of their natural resources because the regime stole all the money that they got from it or gave it away to foreign actors and gave away their sovereignty 20 plus years ago.
Let's come back to the oil in just a second, because I want to talk about that first thing that you said. In regard to The differences between, Libya and Iraq and other countries, there's this little thing called the Monroe Doctrine, which people don't have a clue, Paul. They don't have a clue. That was a James Monroe in 1823 warned European powers because Spain and others, the French, the British, still had designs on areas around America. And he laid down the law in this doctrine that we are, that in our hemisphere, we are, these are my words. This is not what James Monroe wrote. We're like, this is our Western hemisphere. We are the big dog. And if anyone from another sphere comes in and tries to seek influence or power or build enemy establishments, we have the right to intervene. And so it's different in the Middle East. It's not different here. This is our hemisphere. And for the very reasons that you just mentioned, in fact, I was just reading this morning, just to make this clear, we've got Russia, Hezbollah, Iran. Red China was just getting ready to draw Venezuela into their Belt and Road Initiative, which has caused them to take power in Africa, in South America, Central America. They've been spreading everywhere. And that, I guess, has been stopped. So it has been Russia and China, of course, one of the oil. And so it's very complex. I suppose the president had to make this understandable to people because of our ignorance as Americans, really and truly. And it is true that drug trafficking is a huge problem. So that's the issue, the legal issue they're going after him over. But the real reasons, the other reasons, are deeper and even more complex. So anything, I'm going on and on, but comment on that if you would.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the narco issue, the drug trafficking issue, is a real issue. You're absolutely right, and that is the legal basis upon which we, you know, that the indictment of Maduro and two of his nephews actually before that, two of his nephews were indicted for and convicted of drug charges, and then were sent back by the Biden administration. Now Maduro has, you know, ended up in New York. He's going to be on charges now for narco trafficking, and that is the legal basis for our intervention there. But at least, and probably bigger a concern is the issues that I've touched on before, is the humanitarian crisis, which has caused about 8 million Venezuelans to flee since 2014. That outstrips the number of Syrian refugees that have resulted from that civil war since about 2011. That puts it in perspective. It's a major issue, and that obviously has been a major destabilizing factor, as I mentioned before, throughout all of Latin America, because massive amounts of Venezuelan migrants have gone to throughout the whole continent, as well as the United States. Then there's the fact that they have brought with them other problems, and these countries are having issues knowing how to integrate these people into the societies. You've got a lot of concern throughout the continent about that. You've got a lot of concern about the bad actors that are in Venezuela throughout the continent as well. You've got American interests that are being threatened, as you and I have both said, from the major actors we've just mentioned. The national security threat to the United States has been growing. China, Russia, Iran, and the others have been using that as Venezuela as a base. We couldn't let that happen forever. And with the world changing shape really dramatically right now, we're really quickly changing and shifting period of geopolitical reality right now. And we need to, as Trump has said he recognizes, consolidate our relationships throughout the Western Hemisphere so that our neighborhood, and Marjorie Taylor Greene is wrong, the Western Hemisphere and all the Americas are our neighborhood. And we need as good relationships with our neighbors from the tip of Tierra del Fuego up to the Arctic Circle as possible. And that's in the economic sphere, in trade and economics, culturally, politically, and security-wise. Uh-huh. And this is a step, in my view, in the right direction, in that we appear to be checking the ability of our opponents around the world of using a neighbor that is literally right across the Caribbean from us, from attacking our interests there. And on the other side, that's the negative aspect of it, where we're taking away a negative and we're potentially adding a positive, which is putting all those natural resources that I elucidated before to work for not just the United States, but the Venezuelan people, as Trump himself has said. He said, we're not in this to take over all this for the United States. We're in this to develop this for America. for Americans' interests, as well as the Venezuelan people who have gotten no benefit from this since Hugo Chavez took power.
You know, let's go back to the oil for a second, because I interrupted the important things you were saying. I was just reflecting in regard to that. Excuse me, I started out talking about this a little bit. When American oil companies were refining the oil that Venezuela has, that natural stuff they have in the ground, this vast resource, the Venezuelan people were really, they were benefiting. They were, as we said earlier, the third most prosperous country, I believe, in South America. Wait a second.
Well,
in the Western Hemisphere.
In the 1950s, I believe they were the fourth wealthiest country on the globe in terms of per capita GDP.
Yeah.
That's a stat that I've seen. If that's not exactly right, it's very, very close to that. So they were doing very, very well.
Right. So my point is that America was down there refining the oil, and of course the companies were making money and Americans were prospering, but so were the Venezuelans. And so that's the point. And the Venezuelans, as I understand it, and I think you touched on this, they cannot do anything with the oil that they have. They don't have the capacity for refinement that we do.
That's exactly right. And another thing I need to mention as well, and this is almost nobody knows this, my wife's whole family are pretty much all whole family are engineers. And one of them in particular spent time working with PDVSA engineers for a number of years down there. PDVSA, for our listeners that don't know, is the state-run petroleum company of Venezuela. And PDVSA, until Hugo Chavez took over and politicized it and put people in charge that didn't know anything about the oil industry, was a world-class run oil company. It was pretty much just as well run as Exxon, Chevron, British Petroleum, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason why was because those major American actors were the ones that trained the Venezuelan executives, administrative staff, and engineers to run it well over a period of decades. So we would take their very bright young engineering students, train them in how to run a world-class oil company, and then put them in charge. And they ran it for the benefit of Venezuela. Now, did American oil companies make money? Of course they did. But the Venezuelan people also benefited, not just in terms of tax revenue and, revenue coming to the state coffers from other means from that, from export, but also by the human capital that was created by their collaboration with the Americans in that area. So they had huge numbers of oil engineers and energy professionals that were educated by America's world-class oil and energy companies that really benefited Venezuela. Now, when Hugo Chavez took over and politicized PDVSA and pretty much destroyed it, all that talent went to other countries. So that went to the benefit, in some cases, of Saudi Arabia, of Colombia right next door, and of other countries whose energy industries benefited from that vast pool of Venezuelan talent that America had trained.
Well, so there's a lot to say about that, but it's going to be mutually beneficial. And so that's why it's important to address that, because, people are simplifying it. Even Marjorie did just a few minutes ago. She's telling people that, we're going to take their oil and big business is going to take the money. It's just really a perversion of what's actually happening. And I think it is out of her ignorance. But we're talking to Dr. Paul Coyer, who is an expert on all things international. And his wife is Venezuelan, so he has lots of family and lots of knowledge about what's going on, and that's why I asked Paul to join me this morning, and we'll get back to that in just a minute. But first, when you consider, really, it's just a number that is so staggering, it's hard to comprehend, that since Roe versus Wade was passed back in 1973, and oh, how well I remember that, I've told you my story about that, 67 million babies have been aborted. Just let that soak in. In any way that you can, 67 million babies, and that's 67 million mothers who decided to take the life of their baby. If you ask me why we see so many angry women, bitter, angry, shouting, and just so unhappy, I really often lay that at the feet of abortion. I believe a lot of those women, who are my age really, chose to end the lives of their babies. I'm not saying all of them. But a lot of them did, and their hearts crusted over. You know, God says that if we choose to disobey him, and there are things we want to do that go against his law and his standards. If we really want to do it, he lets us. But then he hardens our hearts. If you want it, you've got it. He gives you over to that. And I really do think that explains a lot of the meanness and hardness of women in our country now. 67 million babies aborted and 67 million moms whose lives have been really ruined, even if they don't recognize it, because of that choice that they made. And I hasten to say, because I don't want to leave it at that, there's nothing God can't forgive. If you're one of those women, do not misunderstand me. God removes our sin as far as the east is from the west, but we have to repent. We have to admit it. What we did was really killing our babies. You have to admit that and repent, or God cannot heal you. And so today, if you would like to help just prevent it, prevent young women from making this mistake and making this choice, go to preborn.com/Sandy. And $28 pays for one ultrasound. Of course, any multiple of that will pay for other ultrasounds. But Preborn uses your money wisely. You can see from the numbers of babies that they have saved and mothers' lives that they have changed. Preborn.com/Sandy.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Let's talk about the enemies that are there. One thing we didn't talk about, which we've, of course, discussed in the past, is Cuba's influence in Venezuela. The Cubans have had oversized influence, and they've been there, as I understand it, enforcing the, you know, ruling over the people, enforcing these horrible actions that Maduro has taken. So what do you think they're going to just leave town? Are they going to pack up and leave? What do you think they're going to do?
That's a very good question, and I wish I had a good answer for you. I really don't, because you're right. The Cubans have been involved from the very beginning. Fidel Castro basically ran Hugo Chavez as his own personal agent for a long time, for his whole life, from the time he was recruited as a young military officer, and did that so that he could run Venezuela as his fiefdom to the benefit of Cuba, who in the 1990s, of course, was near to imploding economically because it lost its Soviet patron. And it needed Venezuelan oil and other patronage and got it from that relationship. So Cubans, as Marco Rubio, I've heard him say this repeatedly as well over the past weekend over media interviews, Cubans provided Nicolas Maduro security detail because he didn't trust Venezuelans. And it also illustrates the stranglehold that Cuba has had on Venezuela. They have allegedly thousands of personnel spread throughout, up until now at least, spread throughout the Venezuelan government to really administer things. They have provided the security personnel that have repressed dissent, both within the military and the larger population. They've been a very pernicious influence. What's going to happen with the Cubans now? Are they just going to give up and go home? It's a very good question. I don't have an answer to that. It's one of the many things that we need to see what happens. And I know some of the people in the administration that were involved in planning this. We haven't talked about it because they're very judicious and they can't. But I would presume that we have a plan for this and that we will be addressing this. Now, the president and Marco Rubio both said that Delcy Rodriguez, Maduro's vice president, and now the acting president of Venezuela is agreeing to play ball with us, so to speak. So let's see how that goes. But like I said, a lot of unknowns, and I just don't have a quick, easy answer for what are going to happen with the Cubans. And that is a very, very major issue and a key thing to watch.
Yes. Well, of course, my understanding is that Cuba's really, they've been suffering for decades, but now that they truly are suffering, maybe in a whole new way, and I think
they're in a very bad spot.
You know, Paul, you just can't help but wonder if there's not going to be some sort of intervention there to put that at rest, finally, the issue of Cuba, and that might settle. That might be something that'll be happening. The other thing, though, is, Russia is in a weakened state. I can't imagine them. I don't know if you know anything about their response. I don't think they can do anything right now because they're overextended where they are the war they're in.
Yeah.
With those other people.
Ukraine.
Thank you. Sorry. All right. So Hezbollah and Iran. Now, that's interesting because the Israelis pretty much decimated Hezbollah, at least we thought. And Iran has just taken a big hit by the Americans. So, and President Trump actually threatened Iran recently, you know, we can come back. We can do it again because there were rumblings of them rebuilding. So that's a factor in all of that. I don't know how strong Hezbollah and Iran are right now to dig their heels in.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but in the last few days, there have been massive street protests in Iran, and the regime is under threat.
Yes,
so,
that's right.
You know, they're pretty weak at home. I mean, there have been major economic issues. There was, of course, the war with Israel, the strikes by the United States. The regime is on its back heels. The Iranian people really do want freedom. The women are tired of the chadors, they call them, the head coverings, and the morality police. The men are tired of a lot as well. So we'll see what happens there. But I think that they are on their back foot. I'm not sure that they have a lot of capacity to make an impact in Venezuela. One of the things that I find interesting in terms of Trump's action this past weekend and the hostile non-hemispheric powers there, specifically China, was China has sold a lot of military equipment to the Venezuelans, as have the Russians. And all that proved to be pretty worthless in effectiveness.
It just made me laugh.
I don't know why, right? The Chinese, for example, they sold them long-range radars. They sold them anti-aircraft missiles. They sold them all kinds of other things, and nothing worked. We had electronic countermeasures that were put into play, as General Kane discussed, right away, the beginning of this process, that neutralized all of that. There were some attempts to fire back, and those were neutralized immediately at American helicopters and aircraft. You know, I haven't seen any reports on how much of that weaponry was Chinese and Russian, but I do know some of the Chinese weapons platforms that the Venezuelans bought were proved to be utterly toothless. And that's going to be a black eye on China's ability to sell its weapons around the world, which it's been trying to sell increasing amounts of its weaponry around the world for the last 10 years or so, partly because to do so increases their geopolitical influence as well. When you have the spread of your defense industry, it gives you greater geopolitical influence. That's why the Americans do it. And so this is going to hurt the Chinese in that regard, possibly the Russians as well. And that's one of the things that I take away from this that I take most joy from. It's the fact that these weapon systems didn't serve them at all, actually.
Well, and for the Chinese, of course, as you well know, it's saving face. A lot of what they do is bravado. They have to have this bravado, this confidence. And if something goes wrong, they shame sets in. And that's their biggest enemy is their own shame factor, their saving face thing. So they lost some face, and I'm thrilled about this. I just wanted people to understand, really, Paul, how the layers are, why this was so important, and why what our military did was just amazing. We should be so proud, and we're going to be hearing all kinds of messages about why we shouldn't be proud, but I want to set the record straight. Let's do talk about the drug trafficking, because many are trying to make it sound, diminish this as though it's not important. It's my understanding that in addition to all these other things, Maduro really was a drug kingpin. Can you say something about that, the scope of his influence?
Yeah, well, he certainly was. I mean, that evidence of that is incontrovertible. That's why he was indicted in 2012 in U.S. courts. That's why the Department of Justice issued a warrant for his arrest. This is a slam dunk a case as you can possibly have. I know I've heard Marco Rubio say this. We've had American government documents that lay this out. So that really doesn't need to be proven, despite the fact that some people are arguing that point. It's a pretty obvious, again, slam dunk. We have all the evidence in the world on his involvement. I mentioned earlier his nephews, which were indicted and convicted in U.S. court as well and then let go by the Biden administration. And then, of course, it goes far beyond them. There's a lot of general officers in the Venezuelan military that are involved. There are other major actors in the regime that are involved as well, but Maduro was the top of that pyramid.
One of the things that Marjorie Taylor Greene said, I just want us to talk about briefly. She said if this was really about drugs and really about getting drugs into the United States, it's Mexico that's doing this. It's Mexico that's doing the fentanyl, and we would have attacked Mexico if it was really about drugs. How would you respond to that?
Well, President Trump mentioned that this past Saturday, I believe. He said, I don't remember, maybe it wasn't Saturday, but I've heard him recently. I think it was Saturday. But at any rate, recently, he addressed the issue of President Sheinbaum and Mexico and said that he had offered her assistance with the cartels, and she was reticent to accept that assistance for a variety of reasons. One of the big ones was he portrayed her as being afraid of the cartels. And he mentioned that something is going to have to be done, quote unquote, about them going forward. So clearly that's on our radar. Clearly that's a major, major concern. But I would answer Marjorie Taylor Greene by saying it was, yes, the drugs were a major issue, but again, not the only issue. There's the fact that Venezuela is hugely important to the United States in terms of its being used as a base of all of our enemies around the world at the same time to attack our interests in a way that is not happening in Mexico. Does Mexico have bad actors there that dislike America? Of course. But Venezuela was a very unique, toxic mix of those bad actors all doing very bad things at the same time and being welcomed into that country with open doors ever since Hugo Chavez. Yep. So, you know, that's a big difference.
Well,
there
also,
are many places around the world we could look if we want to target drugs. But, you know, Afghanistan, obviously, we spent 20 years there. I don't want to get into a discussion about why that was a mess. But, you know, the heroin trade, poppies, there is Burma and Southeast Asia. There's a lot of places we could look, yes. But Venezuela was the one that, for a variety of reasons, including the narco trafficking, including China, Russia, Iran, Hezbollah, et cetera, including the humanitarian crisis, including many other things that we've discussed, needed to be addressed and needed to be addressed sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I just say one step at a time here. And speaking of Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico, there was an interesting little exchange on Fox with Victoria Coates. Victoria, I don't know where she is now. She was with Heritage. She used to be with Ted Cruz. She's just great on national security. So this is just a short clip. Mm-hmm. It's clip four. Let's listen.
Claudia Sheinbaum, the president of Mexico, simply appearing to condemn what has happened because she cites Article 2, Paragraph 4 of the Charter of the United Nations, which says the members of the organization in their international relations shall refrain from the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state or in any other manner inconsistent with the purposes of the United Nations.
Article 2 of the Charter of the United Nations is not binding U.S. law. Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution is, and that was the authority the president used.
I thought that was a pretty good comeback by Victoria Coates.
Yes, well, I mean, she's right in that the United Nations Charter is not the guiding law of the United States. It is the United States Constitution. And that's something that this president, President Trump, has reminded us of repeatedly, is that while we respect international law insofar as it keeps order, insofar as it orders world commerce, keeps peace, does all the things that it's supposed to do. At the same time, our ultimate guiding interest, as Marco Rubio and the President both said this past weekend, is what's in the best interest of the United States. And that's where Victoria talks about the Constitution is our guiding law, and that guides us, our actions going forward. She's absolutely right. There was another point that was made that I wanted to address. Now I've forgotten what it was early in the narrative of the gentleman who was asking her a question.
Fact that Maduro was not the duly elected president, is that?
That's right. Thank you. That's exactly what it was. Yes, I wanted to mention the fact that the Biden administration is interesting that today you see the Democrats that are attacking President Trump's action and saying that it is, you know, it is illegal, and somehow saying it's morally questionable as well. It's very definitely not morally questionable at all for all the reasons I've discussed. But the Biden administration, as well as the Trump administration, both did not recognize Nicolas Maduro as a legitimate leader of Venezuela, nor do about 60 countries around the world, including all of the EU. So to say that this is, you know, an attack on a duly elected president and a threat to Venezuelan sovereignty and an attack on democracy in Venezuela, it's quite the opposite of that. So, and this is something that American media tends to get wrong, partly by constantly calling Maduro President Maduro. That gives him a certain level of honor that he should not have. He should be called a dictator. He should be called a strong man. He was the de facto ruler until Friday night, but he was not the president. And pretty much everybody everybody acknowledges that he stole the election of July 30th, 2024. The opposition had the receipts and evidence to prove that they won it by greater than 2-1 margin. So unlike many other leaders around the world, Maduro was decidedly not the duly elected president of Venezuela. He was merely occupying that space and using it to oppress the Venezuelan people and attack American interests and align himself with America's enemies.
Paul, I just got something in my inbox. So there was a report that just came out that says Iran's supreme leader is preparing to flee his country for Moscow. He's going to leave.
Well,
so I just thought
that was great news if that's the case.
Yeah, well, it's coming from the Western Journal, and it's reported in the Times of London. So anyway, we'll see. But that's already a shoe that's dropping after this attack, and it's a big deal. Well, Paul, I'm going to ask you one last question, and it's actually impossible for you to answer this. I'll tell you right up front. But what are your thoughts about Venezuelans returning back to their country? They're all over the world now, many thousands here, as you well know. But they love their country. They love their country. Do you think many of them will go back?
That's a very good question. I think that some of them at least will. I couldn't tell you what percentage or proportion may. Many of them, of course, such as my wife, have made lives in other countries now. They have citizenship in other countries, and they're thriving in those other countries, and that's very good. But you're right, they do love their country. Venezuelans are some of the most patriotic people in the world, and in a very good way. If we get to the point, which I pray that we do, that Venezuela is transitioning to both competent and honest government, and the natural resources and other national resources are being used for the benefit of the Venezuelan people, and Venezuela is in a state of nation building where the people feel like they can work together with a good government and build their country again, I think a good proportion of them will go back. I have friends, as does my wife, who are in other countries from Latin America to Canada, elsewhere, who are engineers that have other key skills that are not able to use those degrees in the countries where they've gone to because they'd have to go through years or more schooling to do so. But back in Venezuela, they could. And they're well placed to help rebuild Venezuela if it looks like Venezuela is actually being rebuilt. So while not being able to give you a percentage, I think you're right. I think a large number of them at least would. Because they would just be thrilled to see Venezuela back on a surer footing and would be inspired by patriotic fervor and love of country to rebuild the country that they love so well and for such good reason. Venezuela is an amazing place with amazing people, and they've driven out some of the best human capital and I suspect that a large percentage of that would go back.
Wow, that would be so great. Now, one other thing, just in passing, and then I'm going to let you go. There was a strong evangelical population in Venezuela. We have a lot in common with them. Their democracy was important to them. It was working. There's a strong Christian influence. And so that's, again, why this is not like Afghanistan or Gaddafi's country or Libya and the others. It's a very different place, and it is in our hemisphere. So we wish and hope and pray that this will be a final turning of events and restore this great nation to what the people deserve that love it. And so, Paul, research professor at the Institute of World Politics and a million other things, thank you for your time, and give my best to your wife. I'm happy for her and her family of what's happened in Venezuela.
I will pass that on with joy.
Okay, all right. God bless you, Paul. Talk to you soon.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Maduro and his wife, and said that they will be put on trial right here in New York under completely false allegations of drug trafficking.
It's never going to happen.
We are here to say that New York City will not tolerate this illegal terrorism.
Well, that was most of, at least a portion of some of the protests in New York City, which sprang up so quickly. And that's what I want to talk about. So they're all organized. They're really actually all over the country now protesting this, you know, lawless bombing of this poor Maduro, the victim of President Trump's imperialism. And so you're going to hear words like that. And I want to talk to you about that because it's important that you understand what's going on with this as well. Azra Nomani is she's been on with us before. She is a Muslim woman who does investigative work. She's certainly not a Sharia adherent Muslim. She's just fascinating. She has a real passion for truth. And so actually she's just now going to work for Fox to do investigative work. And thank goodness. And because I'll give you an example of her work. She wanted to see who's organizing and funding this pro-Maduro demonstrations. And so I want to read a little bit of this, at least a little bit of this. She said the street protests were organized within 12 hours and before Maduro was even on U.S. soil. How did they do that? How did they do that? Said Azra Nomani as she began to research. Well, let's just say she discovered this video, which I'll just go ahead and play that for you, and then I'll explain to you who you're listening to and who they are. Let's just say this is the group, part of the groups, plural, that are organizing this, and they're very, very proud of themselves. Let's listen to clip six.
Well, Eugenia, a few of us stayed up all night last night once we heard the news, conferring with each other, conferring with other organizers, and by 3:30, 4 o'clock this morning, we put out the call for demonstrations to happen today, Saturday, January 3rd, less than 12 hours after the bombing and kidnapping of the president of Venezuela. You have tens of thousands of people. I think we're in a watershed moment, epic moment. We should just be raging. We should be angry. We should be in the streets. It's a class war. It's a global war. It's an anti-imperialist war. More than 100 cities on less than 12 hours' notice, that's a harbinger of what's coming. We had a demonstration in Washington, and the 5051 folks were having a demonstration time for the same day. And as a lot of the 5051 people came past our protest site, and it was against the genocide in Gaza, people stopped for a second, and they said, oh, no, this isn't our demonstration. We're going to the other one. And off they went. Today, in the early morning of January 3rd, hours after the Answer Coalition and others called these demonstrations today, 5051 immediately wanted to collaborate. They were saying, we want to co-host this today. The reason the demonstrations went from like 60 at 10 o'clock this morning to like 100 by 11:30 was because of the entrance of these other organizations that have been struggling against Trump, but on more or less on domestic issues. So it's really very, very promising.
Very, very promising. And of course, who are these people? Well, they're communists. They're agitators. And you may recall, we've talked about this before. Arabella is, for one thing, a consortium of leftist causes who get their money, dark money, from various sources. And we've tracked a lot of it to George Soros. But there are other billionaires. There's one that's Chinese-American, who hates the country. I can't think of his name right offhand, but he's one of the funders. And there are other funders as well. And they are a 501c3, tax-deductible dollars. And most of the time, we find out they actually get their funding through American tax dollars. Remember some of those things that Doge exposed about how much money was going to these causes? So it's a mess. It's a very dangerous mess. And you can tell by their language. This is class war. This is a colonial, American imperialism. These are the words of communist left. And I want to read a little bit more of Azra's discovery here, because I think it's really interesting, and I think you'll think it's interesting too. She said, as U.S. forces captured Maduro, a parallel operation began almost instantly inside the United States, a rapid, coordinated information and street mobilization campaign by a network of self-described socialist, Marxist, communist organizations, which operate as nonprofits and don't have to pay taxes. She says, for 3 years, since October the 7th, I've been seeing the same thing at protest after protest. Venezuelan flags showing up at anti-Israel rallies, not randomly, not organically. He said, she goes on to say, this wasn't about Gaza or Venezuela or peace. This is about, I'm filling in the blanks here, disruption. It's about revolution, global revolution to overturn capitalism and democracies and real democracies like our democracy, not this silly notion that that whatever people want of any stripe or any collection should have their way. The minority should rule. It's a perversion, really, of democracy, which, by the way, the founding fathers said they didn't think we should want. We need a republic. That's what Ben Franklin said. And when he was asked, what kind of a government did you give us? He said, a republic, if you can keep it. So we don't have straight democracy. That means we would, if we had a straight democracy, we would vote on every single issue. That would be untenable. And so, but I move on here. So she said, when activists protested Benjamin Netanyahu and burnt the American flag and painted an upside down red triangle using the symbol Hamas uses for targets, writing, Hamas is coming, I went to their bus pickup spots to follow the money. I saw protesters climbing into buses. That's when I saw their T-shirts. They were all proudly wearing red T-shirts for the Party for Socialism and Liberation. The group has rented the buses. Then I went to the address for the Answer Coalition that had gotten the protest permit. It was in Adams Morgan on Florida Avenue. This is in D.C., not far from where I live. Outside, there were two flags flapping in the wind. Whose flags were they? Cuba and Venezuela. And that's when I knew this wasn't about peace or anti-war. This is about ideology. And so I could go on and on. I mean, but I just want you to know these are not organic. These are not people who are just so upset about Maduro. No, these, and even you're going to see fake Venezuelans. You'll see just all kinds of things because the games that they play are very efficient and very good. People like Marjorie Taylor Greene, though, won't know that. And so I hope she gets the memo from Ezra Nomani. So the Alliance for Global Justice, according to other sources, is really one of the biggest amplifiers. And what they're amplifying right now is you probably have heard it said that Maduro is the head of the Cartel of the Suns. And so I'm not going to even go into all of that, except that now the mantra from the Alliance for Global Justice is that the Cartel of the Suns does not exist. It does not exist. This is all a lie, as you know. And I find out that this really grabbed my attention. One of the founders of the Alliance for Global Justice is somebody that I know and have known for years. He's from Chicago. He was a communist member of the Weather Underground with his wife, Bernadine Dorn. They went on the lam. They killed people. They bombed judges. They bombed the U.S. Capitol. It's a really lot to be proud of. And Bernadine went on to be a law professor at Northwestern, and Bill Ayers, her husband, Bill Ayers, became a professor writing textbooks for education departments at colleges and universities, including my son's alma mater, Wheaton College. Yeah, so you don't think I was silent about that. Bill Ayers is a subversive communist, and he is behind now the Alliance for Global Justice. So that's just some information I thought you should know. If you want to find out more, Ezra Nomani, again, has written a whole article on Fox about this, and that would be a source for you to use and repeat some of the things I told you. So, well, that's all I have to say about Venezuela right now. You can see that it's very complex, but let me just say President Trump did a very good thing. And if I don't know what is more America first than what he just did. We are trying to shore up not only our economy, but also our security in this hemisphere. We can't let the Chinese, the Iranians, the Russians, Hezbollah, our worst enemies, be planted in Venezuela, which is what they were doing, using that as a base of operations. And now that's going to be over. It's going to be over. And the resources of Venezuela, which are rich and deep, will be belong to that country once again. And they can restore it and make it beautiful and well-run as it used to be. Again, the third or fourth largest, most successful economies, I believe, in the Western Hemisphere. at least that, if not the globe. And so that's what the goal is. I think it's great. I'm excited. And we just need to pray because we have all of these oppositions, not only from our side, who talk about, you know, regime change. Those are the words they use, not understanding the full implications of this. I'm not for regime change either, for unless it's important to our safety. And this is. So think twice before you repeat those things. And I hope today has given you a fuller understanding of what just happened over the weekend in Venezuela. God bless President Trump. God bless our military and all the people that risk their lives to make this happen. All right, well, that's it for today. I want to remind you that Preborn is our sponsor, and you can help them by donating at preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.